As we know now, a total of 33 cases of COVID-19 have been confirmed on the island of Ireland. In the Republic, two new cases confirmed yesterday, bringing the total to 21. And I'm joined in studio by Priscilla Lynch, the Medical Independence Clinical Editor, and also on the line, Yvonne Williams, GP at the Shannon Medical Centre in County Clare. First of all, to you, Priscilla, as I say, two new cases that we found out about yesterday evening, and they are what the HSE is calling community transmissions. In other words, these people hadn't been to an at-risk area and they're not really clear as to how they would have contracted the coronavirus.
That's right. Out of the 21 cases in Ireland so far, three are community transmission, and these are the more worrying cases. So these are cases that haven't been to an affected region or haven't been in contact with the direct diagnosed patient. So there's one more in the south, and they've named the actual hospital, which is a new departure for them, the Bonsecours Hospital in Cork, and a risk assessment is underway there. And there's also a case in the east. So this obviously means that there will probably be more cases today and later in the next few days as well. We remain in a containment phase, though. They've kind of emphasised that, so that contact tracing is underway as much as possible, and any patients that have been diagnosed have been isolated and whatnot. So it really remains to be seen how far into the community this will have spread in the coming days. But that's just the more worrying aspect of it when it's in the community as opposed to cases that have been directly traced back.
It was interesting listening to Sam McConkie, Professor Sam McConkie, on the This Week programme yesterday, saying there needs to be a big shift of people in the public service dedicated, I think he mentioned a figure of 5,000, to help with the whole business of tracing.
Yeah, he wants, I suppose, people to be redirected from other work into contact tracing. But there's a lot of work involved in contact tracing and a lot of expertise. The people who do it currently are well used to doing it for other diseases such as TB. Mm-hmm. And there's, you know, particular procedures and protocols to how to do it. So I suppose people would have to get training in order how to do it. It depends really on how many cases we are going to get in Ireland. But I suppose his main message is that we need to be prepared and we need to put in place plans and redirect resources and staff if needs be to make sure that we can contact trace to try and reduce the amount of numbers. We know at the moment that obviously the disease isn't going anywhere. There's over 109,000 cases globally, still obviously a very tiny amount when you consider the global population, but it's continuing to spread, and it's continuing to spread to new countries, over 100 countries. But it's not about panicking, it's just about trying to slow it down and contain it as much as possible.
Yes, and that point has been made again and again. We need to be alert but not panicky. Let's go to Yvonne Williams, as I say, GP at the Shannon Medical Centre in County Clare. Yvonne, thanks for joining us. How are things there at your practice today? Are you having many calls now from concerned patients? What kind of things are they raising with you?
Yeah, we're having quite a few calls over the last few days from patients. Some are worried and want to speak to somebody who knows their history. We have people whose companies have advised them that they need a letter from their doctor if they're in an at-risk group, and they'll be allowed to work from home if they have such a letter. So that's creating an extra demand on us to review patients' files and see who's at risk, who's not. We have people looking for sick certs because someone else in their family has been advised to isolate, and they would prefer to also keep themselves at home, you know, until they get results on their partner or spouse. With people looking for a certificate to cancel holidays so that they can get refunds for holidays because they're afraid to travel. And then on top of that, I suppose we have people ringing with symptoms. We've had a lot of people who are contacts of contacts, so they know somebody who has been contacted by the HSC to say that they have, you know, been in contact with a case. And they're also, you know, nervous, particularly people with underlying medical problems and older people, which is understandable. So we've had to sort of change our system that we're doing a lot more telephone triage than normal, and we're changing our appointment system so that people who are coming in with coughs, colds, respiratory symptoms are going to be seen at a different time to all the other patients. They're no longer going to be brought into the surgery during normal working hours.
That's interesting. In fact, it's as good a cue as I'll get to go to our next item. Stay with us, Yvonne. Just on the question of GPs taking steps to protect patients and staff on the front line, Evelyn O'Rourke visited one Dublin surgery that has made the decision to shut down its waiting room.
Now, so you're sitting in your car waiting for your doctor's appointment.
Yeah.
And what did they tell you before you came?
They asked a few questions, and then they said that you wouldn't be waiting in the waiting room in the doctor's. You'd just stay in your car and then they'll phone you to come on in.
So you arrived here at the doctor's a few minutes ago with your child and you've been sitting here waiting.
Yeah, exactly.
Hello, police speaking.
Oh, that's great. Perfect. I'll be in now, Aidan. Thank you. Bye. Bye-bye. And I just got a phone call now from them to say that the doctor's ready so we can go on ahead in now.
So your car is your waiting room at the moment?
That's it, yeah, exactly. It seems to make sense. Like, it's working here well. I see people getting their calls and going in, and we've just had the same now, so it seems sensible.
My name is Dr. Conor O'Toole. I'm a GP in Stillorgan in the Sleavemore Clinic.
So I just spoke to one of your patients there, the system that you're rolling out. Tell me about that.
We decided to try and reduce the exposure of people to each other and to our staff in the waiting room. So we are lucky enough to have some car park space here. And what we do is we get people to ring in when they arrive in a car park, and we call them in when we're ready to see them. So they go directly into the doctor's room, and there's no waiting outside in the waiting room. We're also minimising or trying to eradicate contact with our staff.
Now, what kind of reaction have you been getting from both your patients and your team here?
Extremely positive. In fact, people have said they might do it after the coronavirus issue is over. This is a very big challenge for general practice. And we came up with it ourselves. We had the facilities here. It seemed like a good idea, and we're testing things out as we go. We have group infections control meeting. We've been having this for the last 3 or 4 weeks. And one of the big messages, of course, is people who think they have coronavirus shouldn't be presenting to the general practice, because they will close down the general practices if they come in. And we can do everything for someone with coronavirus on the phone that we can do in the surgery. There is no need for people to come in. This is a thing that needs to be handled by specialist people.
And that's Dr. Conor O'Toole in Stillorgan in South County Dublin speaking to Evelyn O'Rourke. Yvonne Williams is still on the line there from Shannon in County Clare. Presumably, Yvonne, your staff and the staff in other GP surgeries around the country would be concerned about being exposed to patients who potentially have the virus.
Yeah, I suppose we are concerned about that, and some of our staff members, the same as the general public, have underlying medical conditions, and some of them have quite serious underlying medical conditions. We have been given a limited supply of protective gear. I know our surgery, where we would have 7 staff members, we have 4 protective sets of gear is what was sent out to us a couple of weeks ago. The general feedback from GPs I've been talking to and colleagues who are working in the ambulance service and in the hospital would be that we feel very much that people who are travelling in from Italy should be all be advised to be self-isolating like they do in the UK and like they're doing in the US at the moment. Our advice that we're getting from the HSC people is only to self-isolate if they have symptoms. So we have people travelling from these very high-risk areas who are, you know, free to wander around Ireland for up to 14 days. And that's a cause of concern for people who are working on the front line.
Yes, and of course, your patients last week would have been concerned about a positive case concerning somebody working in the very directly in the health service.
Yes, absolutely. And indeed, we had patients ringing up here in a complete panic because they thought that one of the healthcare professionals was indeed a member of our own staff. And we had to put something on our website saying that none of us are currently infected or are self-isolating. So I know the HSE official policy has been to give very limited information. It almost seems like there's a fear of using social media. But when you have a school that's going to shut down and maybe 500, 600 people who are going to get a text message, there really doesn't seem to be any point in delaying giving out that information about the school. I think it would be much more effective if we were to name the school in the area and tell everybody who's been in that school or working in that school to self-isolate, and then to expect an individual follow-up phone call from the HSE, and then the message gets out very quickly and it stops all this fear of, is it my school, is it my cousin's school? You know, the information is out there straight away, and social media tends to spread the word, you know, very quickly.
And they're emphasising, and their explanation and defence is that they want to protect the confidentiality, the privacy of patients. But yet we saw on the TV news in recent days pictures of these ambulances and this fleet of cars in garish yellow and red colours, which are being used for these remote trials. I mean, the last thing somebody wanting their privacy protected is one of those things pulling up outside their gate.
Well, there's 2 things for patient confidentiality. One, if the patient gives you permission to breach that confidentiality, then there is no issue. So if I'm infected with coronavirus and I say to the HSC, I am quite happy for you to get the message out that anyone who's been seen by Dr. Williams and Shannon Medical Centre last week needs to self-isolate, and anybody who goes to whatever primary school, you know, my children maybe. And if you give permission, you're not breaching confidentiality, number one. And secondly, the school doesn't require confidentiality. The patient's name and address and so on are all completely private unless they choose to waive that right. But the school doesn't have to be protected in the same way. So it doesn't make sense to me as a healthcare professional and as a member of the public that they persist with this, because what's happening is that it's just creating fear. And until people can determine what school it is,
yeah, that's to do with schools. And I want to come back to you about schools in a minute. But what about these tests being carried out in people's homes by ambulance personnel?
Yeah, I mean, as long as the paramedics are doing it, they're going to be travelling in an ambulance that is, you know, quite obviously an ambulance and readily identifiable to people. And Ireland is a very small place, so usually, you know, people will be aware if their neighbour has had a visit. That would be the same, I suppose, when we go out at night to do a house call for Shannon Dock. You know, people often see the car, and it's the same if you're sick at home and you require an ambulance. I don't know if there's any way around that. We're not going to rebrand the ambulance fleet in time, and the same with some of the walk-in centres, such as in the Hens.
Would it not be more advisable to use unmarked cars?
If we had a fleet of unmarked cars available, I know our ambulance service is not very well resourced. I don't think they have fleets of such cars that they could get at short notice.
Well, there's probably a lot of cars or car hire firms with cars they won't be needing because of the drop in numbers coming. But anyway, that's another matter. What about, you talked about schools, Yvonne. I mean, do you think schools should be closed at this stage?
Well, from talking to colleagues, I'm in a couple of different WhatsApp groups with GP colleagues and also with a network of women who work in medicine, and a lot of those would be hospital-based. And the overwhelming feedback, I don't think anyone has argued in favour of going ahead with St. Patrick's Day, and the vast majority of healthcare workers I've spoken to think that we should implement the shutdown now rather than waiting until we get to a critical stage like they have in Italy, where it's, you know, larger areas, larger numbers, but it would be better to go in early, you know, later this week, next week, and do it then and shut things down, try and limit the spread while we still have numbers, you know, below 100.
Yeah. So when you say the shutdown, do you mean like they're doing in Northern Italy now?
I'm talking about, I suppose, large gatherings of people, maybe 500 or plus more. So you're talking about mass and concerts and schools, universities and so on, to try and catch it before the community spread becomes at such a level that you're chasing a horse that's already bolted. And it's a difficult decision to make. If you do it too early and it works very effectively, people will say you've overreacted. But if you don't do it in time, we're going to be facing into a situation like Italy. And we have, I suppose, far fewer ICU beds here. And we're less well-resourced in terms of, you know, ICU facilities for patients.
Yes, and would you close the schools now?
Personally, if I was Simon Harris, I would be doing something by the end of this week. I think it's better to get in early before it spreads. And St. Patrick's Day and gatherings like that, they just needs to be reviewed. Common sense needs to prevail. And we have a chance. We're a small island. We have a chance to not follow the footsteps of Italy and find ourselves in that sort of situation in a couple of weeks' time.
Priscilla Lynch, what do you say?
Well, I suppose looking at the response to date, Tony Holohan from the Department of Health, the Chief Medical Officer, has been all about taking proportionate measures and not overreacting, but not trying to say that closing the schools would be overreacting. But it's all about, as Yvonne has pointed out, that, you know, taking measures in time. But a lot of people don't agree with about the schools at the moment. The evidence to date has shown that children aren't affected. We don't know how easily it is being spread among children. I suppose at the moment there's a small number of schools that are closed in Clare and Dublin, for example, with the contacts cases. So at the moment, if you look abroad, it's more like universities that have been closed, colleges, religious congregations, meeting. Those kind of things have been put aside. And have been, you know, limited, particularly in, say, France, where they're looking at gatherings of 1,000 and more being banned. And Italy obviously has had to take some more stringent measures over the weekend. But in Ireland, there doesn't seem to be any evidence to date, according to the health officials, about closing schools en masse. And obviously the pressure that would put on healthcare workers themselves, who would mind their kids and other essential workers while they were going to be quarantined like that. So I think they're looking at all sorts of measures behind the scenes. They haven't announced exactly what we will do, but there is containment plans being put in place for more stringent measures if we need them. But even last week, Nursing Homes Ireland announced visitor restrictions on nursing homes across the country. And Tony Holohan said, well, I don't think at this particular time is that appropriate at the moment. We have to think about the other impacts as well that can have on patients and on the economic side of things as well.
Yes, there is this intense preparation going on in the background. Listening to my colleague Fergal Bowers, who's been very well informed on this, sometimes better informed even than the health authorities about what's going on, predicting that it's more than likely we will see tomorrow a decision announced to call off St. Patrick's Day festivities.
Yeah, Simon Harris this morning said that there will be a decision made within 24 to 48 hours about St. Patrick's Day. Pressure is growing there, obviously, from the medical community just about putting a halt to it. And I suppose fears are not just about really the parades and outside that people might be thinking about. It's more about people congregating afterwards in the pubs and in the restaurants and in small little bathrooms and in confined spaces. But those from the tourism industry said people are already coming. People will have the day off. People will celebrate anyway. So there is a balance to be struck there, but it is looking, you know, there is more pressure on it. And there's there's also small parades have been cancelled already in some counties around the place. So maybe whether they'll go ahead in, you know, small towns or villages, it just remains to be seen. But Simon Harris did say that, you know, people that want clarity and people want certainty, even though they're kind of looking at things on a day by day basis. And they are looking, there's a lot of other measures being considered in the background as well, particularly in relation to health professionals and what they're doing in isolation and also, you know, even clinics.
Right, let's go to Italy because we're joined now on the line by Orla Hurley, an Irish woman who's been living there for the last 30 years, based in Lake Maggiore, which is about 50 kilometres north of Milan in the quarantine zone. Indeed, Orla, good morning. Thank you for joining us. As I say, you're in the heart of the quarantine zone there. What's your sense of how this is being handled and prepared for here in this country?
Good morning, Sean. Well, I have to say that having seen what happened here in Italy, you know, we here in the north of Italy were in the same situation as Ireland is now. About 3 weeks ago, you know, there was a small amount of cases and a small amount of deaths. And then suddenly it got worse and worse, and then suddenly it got completely out of control. So I'm really surprised that, you know, Ireland isn't, my advice, and I'm not a health professional, would be to get on top of it immediately and look at what happened in Italy and try and shut down before things get out of control like they did here. It would seem to me that it would be the logical thing look at what happened here and say, okay, it was like that initially 3 weeks ago. We need to act now, otherwise it'll end up in the same. We'll end up in the same situation. That's just how I feel. I think having St. Patrick's Day parade would be absolute madness. The health professionals here are literally screaming at us now to please stay home. They've asked all companies to allow people who can work from home to work from home, to reduce the amount of people on public transport. They have, you know, shut down the schools, shut down the cinemas, shut down all sports things, just to stop the contagion. It's very, very contagious, and the contagion is huge. And we are all being very careful about not touching other people, keeping our hands very clean. The message has finally, you know, got through, but Ireland can take advantage of what's happened here and act sooner, I would have thought. Anyway, that's my opinion.
Okay, and staying in Northern Italy, I'm joined now on the line by Andrea Vogt, freelance journalist. I think you're about 10 kilometres outside the area that's quarantined, but just describe how it's being handled by the authorities now. I mean, it's quite a big thing to effectively try to lock down 16 million people in that whole region.
Well, absolutely. The question of the day is just that. How will they implement? How will they enforce? There are going to be random checks on the roads, and I have spoken to one person who encountered one of those checks where they say, where are you going? Why are you going? What are your motivations? I also spoke to a restaurant owner who was fined 2,000 euros by his local municipal police because the table did not have a 1 meter distance from the next table. So some, you know, this is, of course, depends on the city you're in. Some places are taking it more seriously than others. But certainly, as the week wears on, we're going to see how seriously the government is taking the lockdown measures. I have to say, I'm with your player cooler, being here where the horses bolted, so to speak. I would say close the schools. It's true that they're not very effective, but they are asymptomatic carriers, the children. They pass it on to then the elderly population, which then ends up in the hospital. We've seen that here in Italy. The death rate is 4% here. There were 366 deaths, most of them average age 80 and up, but some also in their 60s yesterday, we saw. So it is quite alarming, the numbers here, the exponential growth in numbers, seeing, you know, 1,300 more cases in the last 24 hours.
Yeah,
that's because you know, more stringent measures weren't taken sooner.
We're going to try and get you back on a better line if we can, Andrea. I want to go back to Orla, first of all, Orla Hurley. Are people genuinely, are they fearful about how this has been progressing just from talking to people you would be friendly with there and people you would know?
there was a bit of a panic when 3 weeks ago when the government introduced the first sort of red zone lockdown area. There was a bit of a sort of mad panic, and people went, you know, and you know, sort of emptied the supermarket shelves and things like that. And then and then school were closed and things like that. Then it calmed down a little bit. But then over this last weekend, when things got a bit chaotic again, there was again a bit of everybody's very, very worried now, because the health professionals have just been very, very strict and saying to people, really, you've got to cop yourself on, you've got to obey the rules, and there's very little we can do. The only thing you can do is, you know, stop passing. The contagion is the important thing, and you keep your meter distance from other people. You wash your hands. You elderly people should actually stay home. They've encouraged local communities to help elderly people by, you know, people offering to go and get the shopping for elderly people, so that the elderly people do not have to leave the house. Yes, people are worried now. People are being much, much more careful. I think it wasn't taken as seriously in the beginning, but now people are taking it very seriously, because we want this to be over. We want to move on, and we want the contagion to be contained.
Yeah, thanks indeed for that, Orla. I'm joined now as well by Sean, who's just back from a ski trip in northern Italy. Sean, good morning. I gather you flew in from that ski holiday in northern Italy via Lyon yesterday. You flew into Turin Airport at the start of your holiday, and I gather you're surprised that you were checked at Turin but not in Dublin.
That's correct. And just to let you know that we weren't checked in Lyon Airport either on our route home yesterday. But regardless, we got the coach from where our resort was, 4 a.m. to Lyon. Flight was at about 10 to 12, and then flew into Dublin Airport. And I honestly expected to see checks of some sort. Maybe they have a separate section for flights from Italy, but I didn't see any evidence of any checking. I did see a desk with two people sitting down, leaflets, and there were posters evident hanging up with information about the coronavirus, but I saw nothing else.
Yeah, you were there with your wife and three children in Aosta in northern Italy. How far into your holiday were you when the first case was diagnosed in the region you were in?
Well, we arrived in Aosta, La Tuile Aosta, via Turin last Sunday the 1st, and it was only Thursday night that the first two cases were confirmed in that region, in that province. And I was told about that Friday morning by my ski instructor. He said that last night they found two cases further down the valley. I'm guessing a distance of kilometres away.
Yeah, and what about now? You say you're surprised that there was no checking of you and others coming in at Dublin Airport. But are you self-isolating? What approach are you taking? Are your kids in school?
No, my kids are not in school, and my company advised me to stay away, self-isolate for 2 weeks. So that's the procedure, self-isolation. And self-isolation, it's easy when you look at the window and see how bad the weather is, not to go out, but I think we'll do the prudent thing and not to mix it anyone really for the next while.
So you're basically going to keep yourselves to yourselves for the next 2 weeks. Is that your plan, Sean?
That's correct, yes. The boys will be out of school for the next week. That'll be reviewed at the end of the week, but I would expect that they'll be out for another week after that.
Yeah, well, look, thank you indeed for joining us, and clearly you're taking a responsible approach to this. I suppose the thing, Priscilla Lynch, is, and we heard Tony Holohan say it again and again, the minister, the reason we're not checking people coming in at the airport is that this is not seen to be effective.
No, the World Health Organization has issued guidelines on this, and they've advised against travel bans and closing of borders and even temperature checks at the airport, because people can have other diseases and people may be asymptomatic coming in. But it is all about, as you just said there, self-isolation from those regions. At the moment, the Department of Foreign Affairs is advising against all essential travel to these particular areas, such as northern Italy and South Korea and so on. But I think there's pressure now mounting that anybody coming back from those regions needs to self-isolate at this stage. But the situation situation is evolving so quickly that even France and Germany now roughly have 1,000 cases each. So will they be in that situation in a few days that we should be asking people going to those regions to self-isolate or to avoid particular regions there? So it is changing very quickly. So again, it's all about being proportionate, as Tony Holohan pointed out, but also obviously acting quick and hard enough, which Italy didn't, it has been criticised for initially. So should we be taking extra measures there with travellers coming back? And in the coming days, the Department of Health is going to put radio ads out there and TV ads, because not everybody has access to the internet. It's all
indeed,
about
that's an important
services.
Point. And it generally, I think, even though some older people are really good on the internet and social media, others aren't, and they just don't use it.
And also in China, they've had no cases over the weekend. There was 2 days with no new cases in China. So they took absolutely stringent measures, which might seem very over the top, but they've managed to actually contain it, so it seems, so far. So that was interesting news.
We can go back to Andrea Vogt in Northern Italy, a freelance journalist. Andrea, I'm just looking here at something that Owen Corrie, editor of Travel Extra, and he's a travel expert, was saying earlier this morning. He said, look, even though Lombardy is in lockdown, airports remain open. Ryanair flights are continuing, as he put it, to take off merrily. Now, how long do you think that situation might continue?
Yes, it's true. The trains are running normally. Also, the airports are remaining open. Alitalia, the last flight from New York, just landed in Milan Malpensa about half an hour ago. They've canceled all flights. But Ryanair seems to still be flying into Sicily, into other places. So, while they've locked down internally to try to stop the spread internally in Italy from going southward, it does seem to be that tourists are coming and going freely. I spoke to one man from Essex who drove through three of the quarantine zones without being stopped yesterday. Now, today there will be more stringent controls. There are police doing random stops. And I spoke to one restaurant owner in the quarantine zone who said the police came, the municipal police, and fined him 2,000 euros. Because the tables in his restaurant were not more than 1 meter apart, which is a safety distance that they're trying to keep people also who are going to restaurants and bars and pubs from being 1 meter apart. Of course, that's hard in Italy. It's very, very dense. People like to kiss on the cheek. They're very used to being packed into small places, but that has all changed here in northern Italy. Today is very quiet. I haven't seen any groups of people gathering, and so it does seem to be a very different, like they've turned a page, really, with these new, more drastic measures.
Is it elbow bumping or toe tipping, or what's the way? What's the new form of greeting there?
Well, right now people are staying home, but there is sort of this embarrassed wave, reaching out your hand and then pulling it back away again, sort of with a smile thing. Hi, I'm happy to see you, but I don't really want to kiss you on both cheeks. So it's a bit awkward, to be honest.
Okay, well, look.
For the Italians and for the tourists as well.
We'll say ciao to you for now. Andrea, thank you indeed for joining us. We'll have more about this after a quick break.
Today with Sean O'Rourke on RTE Radio 1. Tweet at TodaySOR.
And continuing our coverage of the coronavirus crisis. Last night, Brian O'Connell spoke to some late night shoppers in Blackpool in Cork City and got their thoughts on coronavirus.
You're worried about the coronavirus?
I am.
In what way?
I'm going on holidays next week and I'm afraid I'll have to cancel everything.
Where's the holiday to?
Cuba. So I'm flying through the States. So.
What have you been told?
I'm being told that I can't cancel it without losing the
travel insurance. Won't cover it, basically.
Yeah, I'm multi-tripping, it won't cover it. I'm also afraid then, like, if I go and my family, if anything happens while I'm away, so I'm caught.
Do you feel the flow of information has been good up to this point?
If you look for it, it's there.
Did you get involved in panic buying at any stage?
No.
Toilet rolls?
No.
Are you panic buying?
No.
You didn't stock up on the hand sanitizers, the toilet rolls?
I didn't. And I don't think I could have if I wanted to, because from what I can gather, so hand sanitizers are nowhere to be found.
What do you think of the whole situation?
I'm not a panicker by nature, so no, I'm not worried. Possibly more worried for people that would have underlying issues.
How would you, I should really give you a hand with your shopping.
You're okay,
into the
no.
boot. How would you feel about self-isolating?
If it was necessary, yeah, I would do it. No problem at all. I haven't any issue with that. I worry that people don't take it seriously enough that they themselves should feel that they should isolate, because I think by nature people are very selfish.
And it's a balancing act, isn't it? You don't want to create mass panic.
Exactly.
But at the same time, you want people to be aware of the
you
dangers.
You want people to be aware, and you want people to be careful with their hands and what they touch, and that they wash their hands.
The coronavirus, are you worried about it?
Oh, well, we are, yeah, because I know we're 70 now. And
you're 70?
Yeah, so my husband is older than me, so we are. I'm coming out later, so that I won't be meeting too many people, but you're kind of frightened. But at the same time, I said we'll have to come out and do what we can, you know.
And do you feel you're getting the information you need?
They're doing their best. You see, they can't panic people either, because people would get panicky then. And
the balancing act.
You know, and yeah, the shops, and people actually would really panic, and you can't have that either, you know.
That's people in Cork and Blackpool there at the shopping centre talking to Brian O'Connell last night. Mark Paul is on the line. He's business affairs correspondent with the Irish Times. Mark, increasing calls for the cancellation of the St. Patrick's Day Festival. As matters stand, it's still likely to go ahead, but a decision will be taken within the next 24 hours.
Yeah, I mean, look, we're in sort of Mystic Meg proportions here now, so, you know, trying to predict the future. But I think it's utterly inevitable that the St. Patrick's Day Festival will be cancelled because, you know, I mean, look, I'm not a medical expert, I'm not a virologist, but if you look at the reputational risk for the government and for the state of allowing it to go ahead, it makes no sense to allow it to go ahead. I mean, Ireland would be a clear outlier in Europe to allow an event of that size to go ahead. I mean, if you just look at the raw numbers, 500,000 visitors for the St. Patrick's Day Festival. About 110,000 or more come from abroad, and those visitors then stay for an average of about a week each, those overseas visitors. So it's a big festival, but those are big movements of people. And when you have France banning gatherings of over 1,000, when you have Germany indicating that they may ban gatherings of over 1,000, for Ireland to hold an event, which is effectively just a week-long session, drinking session, and to have that with 500,000 people in the middle of a global pandemic would just look extremely reckless. And if even a handful of cases were ever traced back to the holding of the St. Patrick's Day Festival, I mean, it would be career-ending for some of the ministers involved, you would have to think.
Yeah, it might be career-ending for them anyway. But look, talking about drinking sessions, there's a non-drinking session, as it were, a session planned for next week, a big conference in Dublin Castle about global alcohol policy.
That's right. That's actually due to kick off this week. Due to kick off today, it's the Global Alcohol Policy Conference, which is effectively sponsored by the Department of Health and also by the World Health Organization, bringing in medical experts and people to talk about how to tax, I suppose, the alcohol industry more. But that's going ahead. And there are other conferences. I mean, there in the Convention Centre Dublin in a few weeks. There's another conference due to take place of medical professionals. There's a lot of meetings and major conferences that are going to be hit very, very badly this year because there's too much reputational risk in allowing them to go ahead. So it's in the meetings and events industry is one that's sort of a central plank of the Irish Tourism Authority's plans for this year in terms of growth. And it looks like the rug has been pulled from underneath that for this year at least.
Yeah, I've just got a message from my colleague Michael Corcoran, our rugby commentator, has come in on his text. The whole last round of the Six Nations has been postponed, moved to October the 31st. That's from Michael Corcoran. So the match in Paris, obviously not going ahead next week. Sorry, you want to come back in, Priscilla?
Just coming in about the meetings there. Obviously, the World Health Organization said last week that some countries weren't taking things seriously enough and needed to take particular measures that would try and minimise the spread. But also, it's very interesting there just about doctors and medical conferences. Doctors need to attend medical conferences both nationally and internationally for their continuous medical education to make sure that they can continue to be registered with the Irish Medical Council. And the Medical Council issued a notice yesterday saying for doctors to contact it if they had to cancel attending meetings in Europe or wider abroad as well, so that they had to look at their CME points. And I know there's a lot of discussions underway at the moment because April and May in particular has an awful lot of medical conferences around the country. And one doctor did say to me, he goes, there's a lot of worry that if you have a huge meeting of all the specialists from cardiology in one room and then there's a case there and they have to self-isolate, it could be devastating. So there's a lot of talks underway at the moment about those. So it's not just even about general business meetings. Medical meetings at the moment are under a lot of scrutiny.
Right. And just to reiterate that word from Michael Corcoran, the whole last round of the Six Nations has been postponed. So in the Ireland-French match in Paris does not go ahead, the Ireland-France match. Everything moved to October the 31st, the last Saturday in October. What about the point made by Paul Reid yesterday that even though last week 60, I think it was initially, but that number went up to 100 medical personnel in Cork University Hospital had gone on self-isolation, but that's just not a realistic way to behave. It might be an ideal one, but with the demands of the service, it's just not practicable.
That's right. There's over 170 medical professionals, I believe, at the moment in self-isolation. About 100 of those are connected to University Cork University Hospital. And then in Limerick as well, there's about 70. And we're looking at a couple in the Bon Secours Hospital in Cork as well. So they did issue guidelines last week, even about doctors and other healthcare professionals coming back from the affected regions about having to self-isolate, even if they didn't have symptoms. But then they had to change things as well, just for the hospital sector, that simply for services to go ahead, if people were absolutely necessary, that they could come in, but that they would have had to take all stringent measures to protect themselves and to protect patients. And also that they would have to undergo daily testing as well. So they're obviously talking to staff behind the scenes, staff who recently retired, agency staffing, obviously, which costs the health service a lot as it is, looking at extra agency staffing there, people who are on holidays, can they come in? So there's a lot of talks, you know, ongoing in the background about
that. Looking at the private medical sector as well, getting beds there as well. Look, we leave it there for now. Thanks indeed for coming in to us. That's Priscilla Lynch, Medical Independence Clinical Editor. Also, thanks to Mark Paul and our other contributors, Yvonne Williams, Andrea Vogt, and Brian O'Connell, doing that Vox Pop. We'll hear from Brian again very soon because he's been on another assignment for us. Right now, though, we take another break.
Today with Sean O'Rourke on RTE Radio 1.